This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Overhead Tour Company of St. Louis, the genuine, the original. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
They gather with you on KMOX for the Gas House Gang this Wednesday, New Year's Eve. Hope you're making your plans for this evening. Maybe we'll talk to Matt Pajeski, our producer, about what his plans are. We will certainly talk to Bernie Miklas, who is here with us. Bernie, how are you? Wrapping up 2025 in style today or what?
Yeah, and it's just great to work with you again. I've enjoyed it the few times we've done it. And I hope you're doing well and everything's going great in your world.
Well, you know what? You always put the pressure on because then I'm like, what if this is the first time that he doesn't like it? You know, like, what if I do something wrong? What if I put a toe out of line today and now all of a sudden I'm wrong side of Bernie Miklas? What would I do then?
You know, I don't think you have to worry about that because I mean this. When people that don't work in our business, when they hear me or anyone refer to a colleague as like a total pro, that might seem like faint praise, but it's actually a high compliment. You are a total pro, Nate.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, sir. Thank you very much. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. We'll have Ed Smith joining us at the bottom of the hour to discuss NFL, former NFL tight end in his own right. And I think we're going to talk some college football playoff, I imagine, as well. That'll get underway this evening and then into, well, I guess it's already underway, but the quarterfinals will get underway this evening and then into tomorrow with the rest of them going as well. And let's start with a little Cardinals conversation, though, because we did some of this. I did some of this last night with Kevin Wheeler and Matt Pauly, and we were talking about a few things Cardinals related, including the MLB pipeline up rankings getting updated and kind of the Cardinals investment in that system. But I think I want to skip to maybe a testier topic that we touched on more briefly, which was where the Cardinals are in, not so much in payroll right now, because we all know that they're sort of in a rebuilding period. Whether they want to call it a rebuild or not is not my concern. That's what they're doing right now. And as a result, that payroll number is going to dip, and they have very, very little money committed for next year. Technically, I mean, this is sort of misleading because arbitration and all that, but technically they don't have any dollars committed after the 2026 season, or after the 2027 season, I should say, right now. Do you think, on a big picture level, whether it takes 2 years or 4 years or 6 years, whatever it is, when the Cardinals are back into a position where they feel they've built out this young core such that they can contend for Central Division championships and contend for pennants and World Series again, do you think we're still going to see the appetite from this ownership group to get that payroll number not just on the right side of 15, but even flirting again with that 8, 9, 10 range in baseball where they were for a while?
Yeah, I've known Bill DeWitt for 30, 31 years now, pardon me. And I know that he's not always the most popular guy among Cardinals fans. I, however, while having criticized Bill DeWitt for sort of letting things slide when it could have been avoided, I haven't hesitated to do that frequently, actually. I also never lose sight of the bigger picture. You know, under his stewardship, under his guidance, over the last 30 seasons of baseball, they've been a top five franchise. And the facts support that. In other words, there's no pushback on that. They went off track, and now they got to fix it. And they got to fix it by rebuilding instead of staying in the middle or sliding more in reverse. The only way they're going to go forward is to start to draft and develop players again, which will help their payroll efficiency because they're never going to be up there in the top five with the teams that throw money around like crazy. They're not going to be one of those teams. But even in the last 10 years where the Cardinals, from 2016 through 2025, they've won four postseason games. They're no longer even a factor on the postseason stage. But over those 10 years, they had a top 10 payroll five times, and they were 11th another time, and they had an above-average payroll in 8 of the 10 years. And then the one that was really low was last year, because that's when the unofficial rebuild started. So I had to lay that background at, so you know where I'm coming from. But when Bill DeWitt hired Chaim Bloom And they announced it when he, you know, took over as president of baseball operations at the end of this past season. I got a call from Bill DeWitt, just wanted to talk about a lot of things. And, you know, he was talking about how excited he was because they're going to get back to their roots of player development, which has always been a big, big, big deal with Bill DeWitt. They let that part slide, though. That's on him. And I'll repeat something. I think I've said this on KMOX, but I think it's really worth repeating. Bill DeWitt's never mislead me. You know, when he tells me this is what he wants to do, I believe him because he's never, what's the word? He's never, you know, intentionally misled me, like telling me one thing and he has no intention of backing that up. He's got 30 years of credibility with me in terms of our personal dealings and what he tells me. I said, listen, I know you love, you know, the draft and player development. And, you know, that's why you brought in Jeff Luhnow in the early aughts. And that's why the Cardinals then went on to have this incredible run of success because they got back to their draft and player development roots. I said, and, you know, and Chaim Bloom's got the great background for that, considering what he did in Tampa Bay and also with the Red Sox. He took the farm system when he went there. It was near the bottom of the majors. And when he left there, it was starting to rise toward the top 10 in the majors. And this past year, a lot of the guys he drafted made the Red Sox a top 5 farm system. And he said, yeah, he said, but let me stop you there. He said, the Cardinals have always been about stars. I want stars. You look at what I've done in 30 years here, we have always had star players. It's really important for the Cardinals to do that. And he said, right now, you know, we're hoping, we're developing, we've got some stars in development, we'll see. But if we get this farm system rolling again, and we do develop stars under Chaim Bloom, the guys that we think can carry us into this great future, we're not going to be like Tampa Bay. We're not going to like let them walk away. We want to keep our stars, and that's going to cost some money. But he was making the point, now's not the time to spend money. The time to spend money is when you're getting close to where you can contend again. And if you're managing your money right, and you know, even if you rank 20th or 23rd or 24th in payroll, so what? Because you want to leave a lot of space open on your payroll for when you want to go out and aggressively do some things. So listen, if that turns out to be false, well, then that'll be the first time Bill DeWitt ever misled me. But I don't think it's going to happen.
I think that's a really good point that you make. And it's good to hear. I think people will really enjoy hearing him say, we're about having star players. Right, because I think there's a perception that has started to sort of percolate out there in the last several years that the Cardinals do want to play this true kind of money ball. And you know, I think money ball is the that sort of word that can be used in two ways in baseball now, right? Sometimes it's complimentary when a team is doing well and finding bargains, and sometimes it's derogatory when a team is putting out a roster of kind of, you know, square pegs and round holes, if you will, and trying to shop in the wrong bargain bin. And so I think people will be happy to hear you say that. And I think it makes perfect sense for him to say that now's not the time. That would be wasted money. You know, if you're buying your way from 73 wins to 77 or even from 77 to 81, what are you really getting for your dollar in that situation? The Cardinals don't have a strong incentive to try to buy those wins. Whereas if they build a core that gets them to being a 90-win team in a few years, and they can spend several tens of millions of dollars to buy themselves from 90 to 95. Now you're getting huge marginal value when you're spending that money, because the marginal value of those 5 wins is so much greater than they are going from 75 to 80 or what have you. The other piece that you bring up, and this was discussed, I think, with Paulie and Wheeler last night as well, is that I think sometimes the amount of money the Cardinals have spent in the last few years gets lost because it's been so unsexy. And in this sense, I don't mean because they've been sticking to fundamentals. I mean because they've had to spend it on the back half of their rotation, right? I mean, when they're spending 8 figures, you know what? They spent over $50 million a couple of years ago on some combination of Michaelis and Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson and Eric Fetty. You know, Fetty, I guess, was midseason. But, you know, when you're spending 8 figures on those types of guys to be best case, number three, if not four and five starters. Well, no wonder you're not able to go out and get those guys who are going to be the big headline bats because the money's getting spent on a number four starter.
Right. Hey, listen, can I offer you a sneak preview of a column that I'm in the process of writing? Not literally while I'm on the air, but this this goes along to what you just said. But I got some details on that. Since the start of 2023, the last 3 years, the Cardinals have the 25th best starting pitching rotation, and they're 29th in strikeouts. Their win probability added is 28th. They got a bottom five starting rotation. Do you know how much money they spent total on that rotation over the past three seasons? I calculated it this morning.
I mean, it's got to be well north of $100
million. $273
million. Wow. So that's $90 million a year.
Yeah, in contracts, some of these contracts predate. Let me add that caveat. Some of these contracts, like Miles Michaelis, he's had three different contracts. They predate 2023, but the point is, the bulk of their starting rotation were guys that they had to go out and purchase because they weren't drafting and developing their own pitchers, which used to be a tremendous Cardinals strength. So you got to go chase guys and throw money at them. One other stat to just prove my point here. Since 2023, 25% of the starts and 16% of the starting pitching innings have been supplied by players that they drafted and developed. The other 75% of the starts and the other 84% of the innings were provided by guys, veterans, that they had to pay a lot of money to. So that's why, you know, the old fella here is always confused when I hear fans complain about payroll. Or like, you know, well, all this stuff, this player development stuff, they're just being cheap. They're being cheap. I'm thinking maybe Bill DeWitt and John Mozeliak and certainly Chaim Bloom, I think they would have preferred to have a thriving player development system where they're growing their own starting pitchers. So they don't have to throw money away on mediocre starters.
Yeah, those numbers really underscore the problem the Cardinals are dealing with. Because if you just think about 270, is that 273 million? Is that the number you get? 283?
Yeah.
273 million. So that's $91 million a year over the last 3 years. Imagine that the Cardinals could fill just the four and five spots in their rotation with guys who were on controllable pre-arb, you know, rookie scale deals. And let's say you're paying roughly $1 million a year for those guys, give or take. No, all you're doing is knocking $2 million a year off of that. You're going from $91 million down to $89 million. And now instead of having to fill five spots in your rotation, you only have to fill three. In theory, the Cardinals could have spent, if they had just two guys to fill the four and five spots who were on those rookie scale deals pre-arbitration, they, in theory, could have spent $30 million roughly per rotation spot per year on their top three pitchers. That's, you got Sonny, and Sonny Gray was making 25. So in theory, you could have gone out and gotten two other Sonny Grays or even higher level than that to fill the remaining two spots in the rotation and spent the same amount of money. And that's, you know, it's exactly what you're talking about, that it's not a question so much for those, especially the 23 and 24 teams and their payrolls. It's not so much a question of the raw dollars they were spending. It's where they were spending them and how they were allocating them and how that restricted their ability to get those top-end guys.
Yeah, and I want to make something clear because I think I misstated something, and that's my bad. Because looking at my notes, you know, I included the Miles Michaelis salaries before 2023. So I'm going to correct that. I'm going to subtract those. So that would take it down to 32, 38, 46. That'll take about $50 million off the figure that I gave you. Okay, I just wanted
still.
So that's my bad.
But still.
But the only reason they were spending that much is because they had a catastrophic failure to draft and develop their own starting pitchers. Because, you know, if you go back to all those, if you just go back to like the 2013 team around that time, I mean, they had, you know, they had Michael Wacha, they had Shelby Miller, and they had Carlos Martinez, and they had later on, Jack Flaherty. I mean, they had all these great young relievers that were cost controlled and all that. And I'm leaving a couple starters out, but you get my point. They didn't have to go out and spend a lot of money on pitching because why? Because when you know what you're doing and you have great success drafting and developing them, your payroll efficiency is outstanding. And then that's why you can go out and add pieces that you need elsewhere on your club. And the other thing I've never understood are the people that don't seem to understand, because I've had people get in my face, metaphorically speaking, and they say, well, you know, you talk about draft and development. They've never been draft and development. Look at all their big stars. Look at Roland and Edmonds and Daryl Kyle and Larry Walker. Those guys came from other places, and Goldie and Arenado. Those guys came from other teams. Well, how did the Cardinals get those guys? They traded prospects for them. You know, that's the whole point of having a lot of prospects, because they'll either help you win or you will flip them to get guys that will help you win. I don't mean to sound so cranky, but why is that so difficult to understand? I don't get it, you know? So anyway.
Well, we will take a break, and when we come back, we'll spend a few minutes on St. Louis Billikens basketball. Ed Smith is going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk NFL, and we will circle around to the college football playoff at the end of the show as well. Those Billikens will be in action now under 3 hours. Tip off on Chaffetz Arena and here on KMOX St. Louis against St. Joe's in the Atlantic 10 opener. Coming up next, this is the Gas House Game. That sound means St. Louis Billikens basketball is almost here, just about 2.5 hours. In fact, under 2.5 hours from airtime, 2:45, we will have Rammer and Earl with a call from Chaffetz Arena, which should be a sold-out or very nearly sold-out Chaffetz Arena for the Atlantic 10 opener between the St. Louis Billikens and the St. Joseph's Hawks, who are in the middle of just a weird season. It's been a weird half decade for that. It really, that program's just been in a weird place since letting Phil Martelli go, which is probably just how it goes when you move on from a coach who's so associated with the program the way he was for such a long period of time. Nate Gatter, Bernie Miklas with you on the Gas House Gang. We will have Ed Smith, former NFL tight end, joining us to talk all things NFL in just a few minutes at the bottom of this hour. But before we get to that, Bernie, just your thoughts on what we've seen from just a one-loss Billikens team through non-conference and now getting into the A-10.
Well, first of all, I thought they played a really solid non-conference schedule. You know, like you contrast it to Mizzou, for example.
Well, Mizzou played one of the five worst in the country.
Yeah, they played no one, basically, except they had a win over Minnesota. If you look at SLU, though, I think it was a pretty ambitious non-conference schedule, and they came through it looking really, really good. And, you know, I was looking at the NCAA net rankings, and it's really something to see the Billikens, you know, rated 30th in the country as they enter conference play. That's a really, really good spot for them. They haven't been there in a long time. And I'm not saying that what I'm about to say next to pick on Mizzou. I'm not doing that. But Mizzou is 92nd in the NCAA net ratings. And and SLU's got some solid wins. Illinois is the best, you know, they're number 10, but for SLU to be tucked in there at 30, and if you go by the KenPom projections, he's got them winning this game against St. Joe by 19 points. I hope he's right. 96% chance to win. But what I like about SLU is just their good all-around play. You know, they're scoring one-third of their points on threes. They're scoring 45% or so of their points on twos. They're scoring 21% or so of their points on free throws. They're just so well-rounded. They do a really good job. If you look at like where they rated in adjusted efficiency offensively in the nation, they're 54th, which is great because there's like well over 300 teams we're talking about. But then you look at their defensive efficiency, they're 43rd. So they're basically top 50 in both offense and defense. And they can shoot the ball great. They're 12th in the nation in effective field goal percentage, but they're also great at defending because their opponents, the Billikens rank 8th in terms of their opponents' effective field goal percentage. So it's all there. It's all there. And it's just a matter of taking this into conference play and sort of repeating what we've seen so far, at least as much as they can. But they are a delightful team to watch. They are deep. They're in the top 50 in the nation, which is good in terms of bench minutes. Josh Schertz has shown what he can do in putting a roster together because they've taken a big step in his second year there. And I'm excited by what's to come.
It's a bigger conversation than what we have time for right now, but the Mizzou SLU contrast and the scheduling conversation is worth having because it indicates all sides of this issue in college basketball right now, which is schools like Missouri not wanting to schedule really tough in the early part of their non-conference, not wanting to play those quad two type of games or what they think will be quad two type of games by the end of the year. And as a result, the teams that everybody expects to be quad two type of games, like the Billikens, have a tough time finding any high majors that will play them anytime, anywhere. We'll take a break. Ed Smith with us to talk NFL after this on KMOX. Nate Catter, Bernie Miklas back with you on the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Working on getting Ed Smith with you to talk NFL, but Bernie and I are, believe it or not, capable of doing that as well between the two of us, so we're going to try to hold it down. Heading into Week 18 of the regular season, a couple of games on Saturday, and then the season will finish out on Sunday. Some seeding implications still to shake out. Really, two playoff spots up for grabs at this point, or two division championships up for grabs. Panthers and the Buccaneers will play each other on Saturday. You can hear that game on KMOX Saturday afternoon. And then Sunday night, the Ravens and the Steelers. In both of those, the winner will win the division and will get a home playoff game, and the loser will be out of the playoffs. Then there's the Seahawks 49ers game on Saturday night. That's going to decide the number one seed in the NFC. Bernie, it feels like the conversation in the NFL is not dissimilar to the conversation we're going to have later on at the end of the hour about college football this year, which is it's just more open than what we've come to expect the last several seasons. Obviously, the biggest piece of that is Kansas City being out of the playoffs, but there's also no Cincinnati and there's also no Detroit. So that works perfectly for a place to set up Ed Smith, who is with us now, former NFL tight end, has the very rare distinction of having played in the NFL without playing college football because of his time spent playing in minor league baseball, and now has been hosting the Easy Sports Talk Show in Phoenix for quite some time now. Ed, thanks for being with us.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me, and happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays to you as well. Let's start with what I was just talking to Bernie about, how this feels like the most open NFL postseason that we have had in a long time, in large part because of no Chiefs. But, you know, you can go down the list of playoff teams and top contending teams from recent years, whether it was last year or before, with Cincinnati, Detroit, even Washington last year making the NFC Championship game, and all of them are on the outside looking in this year as well. How do you evaluate such an open chase for the Super Bowl?
This year is anybody's game, man. I've been in all so many confidence pools and different things all through the years, and I've never had a struggle like this year picking a consistent team from one week to the next, you know. And it's just, you know, and I know they want a parity in the league. This is definitely the ultimate sign of parity right here. And this is our first, you know, opportunity or first time in a long time with any Chiefs in there. Possibility you might even not have the Ravens. Obviously, Cincinnati didn't make it. So you got some top-tier quarterbacks that are going to be sitting home. But then you got some surprises. You know, how well Seattle's done. The San Francisco's battle through injury. You've got the Carolina Panthers that have a chance to get into the playoffs. You know, so, I mean, it's anybody's game from week one all the way through to this point. But even more so because you never know what you're going to get with some of these matchups, who might have home field advantage, who might not have home field advantage, because it really is not going to matter because the other team might have more talent. So, man, all I can say is just buckle up because it's going to get even crazier down this stretch going into February.
Ed, I was studying, or no, I shouldn't say studying, it makes me sound highfalutin. I was just looking at some numbers this morning about like which teams in each conference, you know, have the highest percentage of probability of winning the conference. And You got, Denver, New England, Jacksonville, Buffalo, Houston, the AFC, Seattle, San Francisco, Chicago, Philly, and the Rams in the NFC. Now, here's the question. I had to set the table for you. Who do you think in each conference is the most complete team? And that's assuming that they can play their all-around game when they're getting into the thick of it in the postseason. Who are the two most complete teams, one from each conference?
You know, it's crazy to say, because we just saw the Rams get their, get their lunch money taken by Atlanta of all teams this past week. But I'm going to lean, you got some different teams at the top with Denver on one side, Chicago on the other, but I'm not really sold on their quarterbacks yet on the biggest stages. They had some pretty good seasons so far, but I just don't buy them in terms of, they're ready for the big stage. So that's why I'm leaning a little more, even though the Rams, got beat last week, the Rams, possibly Seattle on that second tier. And then on the other side, man, golly, I'd hate to say it because they're like Jekyll and Hyde. But if I had to put my money on anybody, I would say Buffalo with a big question mark, just because Josh Allen, you never know when he's going to put that Superman cape on. But even with their defense, you really can't trust them all too much. But if I had to say, and I was talking to somebody the other day, I was like, if this isn't Buffalo season with Ravens being down, Mahomes not there, if this isn't their time, when is their time? So they better put up or shut up, because that window closes fast. You ask Detroit on that one. And, so I'm going Buffalo on one side, and I got to go with the Rams on the other. Sneakily, the Eagles maybe in the back door there, but they've been playing so inconsistently all year. I don't have much faith in them making a long run.
You know, Ed, you talk about Buffalo and how you don't have a ton of faith in their defense, and that makes sense. My other thought is, especially if we get at some point a third matchup in the playoffs between New England and Buffalo, that you might really see on full display the Stephon Diggs effect in what he does for the Patriots, but more importantly, what the Buffalo Bills just don't have, which is that A-list kind of alpha perimeter guy who Josh Allen can rely on. Because when they have fallen behind in games, they have not looked comfortable. If they can't dictate with James Cook and the running game and play off of that, the Josh Allen drop back and run around for 10 seconds until somebody gets open is only so sustainable.
Yeah, and he's actually, teams are starting to get a little bit of a read on that too. And there have been a couple instances where even Superman looks a little confused. And I'm not saying confused where he doesn't know, what's going on out there, but he looks like they've gotten some answers for him from time to time. There's no excuse for Buffalo to be shut out at home last week against the Eagles, but somehow they figured it out. And if not for a late surge, the game wouldn't even been as competitive as it was down the stretch. But, and that's the one thing, and you gentlemen know this, the one thing about the playoffs is you don't have a chance. Like, if you have one of those lay an egg games, you don't have a chance to come back next week. And that's what scares me about a team like Buffalo, because as potent as they are, all it takes is for another performance like that, and they're packing their bags up for the year. And consistency is what it's all about once you get to these playoffs. And Buffalo definitely hasn't done it. And offensively, they look, scatterbrained sometimes because they don't have that go-to guy outside of Cook or Allen. So, it's a crapshoot. With New England and like I said, even with Denver, the only thing I'm hesitant about is these young quarterbacks, they play so great during the regular season. But I've been there, in my limited time in the NFL. I know how everything changes once you get to the postseason, and the nerves and everything does ratchet up. And that's the one thing I worry about with those younger quarterbacks, because Allen has been there before. But, as I mentioned, like I said, all it takes is one slip of the lip and, the Buffalo could be gone.
Ed, let's talk about, it's an interesting game on Sunday night in Pittsburgh, the Ravens and the Steelers. We have all this, so you just alluded to it, my friend. You have all these up-and-coming teams that haven't been on that big postseason stage for a while to where they go far. And you also have, like you alluded to, all these young quarterbacks. Then you have the Ravens and the Steelers. Whoever wins the game in Pittsburgh goes to the playoffs, wins a division. The loser gets booted out and goes home. You got Aaron Rodgers versus Lamar Jackson because he's expected to play Lamar. Harbaugh's getting all kinds of grief in Baltimore. People are saying he's been there too long. Nobody needs me to tell him. Mike Tomlin, despite having a really consistent career, he's under fire in Pittsburgh. So I couldn't believe some of the stuff they were writing about him after they lost to Cleveland. Anyway, sorry to be long-winded, man. Who you got in this game? Who comes out of there with a dub?
Man, this is a tough one. I got to go Pittsburgh only because they're at home in this one. And then the whole thing with Lamar, something has just looked off all year long. And he just, I don't know whether it's injury or just, you know, I don't know whether he's not fully engaged or whatever it is. He's not using his legs. He's, you know, he's sporadic in the passing game. You know, the best thing that Baltimore could do is come out and do exactly what they did with King Henry this past game. Just run him to the wheels fall off, and maybe that might be their road to victory. Otherwise, you know, I think it's going to be one of those sloppy, AFC North slobber knockers, final score like 14-12 or something like that. And I think the Steelers do just enough, even though they're going to be minus DK Metcalf and his idiotic self. But I think, you know, the only reason, if this game was in Baltimore, I'd be going the other way. But just because it's in Pittsburgh, I'm giving them a fighting chance. And I think, both head coaches, I mean, the pedigree speaks for itself. I always tell fans, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it one day. And you'd be in the same boat as a lot of these other organizations, like us out there in Arizona, still looking for, you know, the head guy and the quarterback. But like I said, those two, Thomason and Harbaugh, they've done enough where they'll be chiseling out their headstone, you know, heads for the plaque for the Hall of Fame is, you know, 5 years after they're done with the game. But it's going to be a good one. I'm definitely going to be tuned into that one.
Ed, we appreciate your time today. Enjoy the games.
You guys, gentlemen, happy new year, you guys, and I look forward to talking again soon.
Ed Smith, host of the EZ Sports Talk Show in Phoenix and former NFL tight end, joining us here on the Gas House Game. We'll take a break. College football playoff talk after this on KMOX. Nate Gatter, Bernie Miklas back with you to wrap up the Gas House Gang on New Year's Eve, the final Gas House Gang of 2025. Let's touch on the college football playoff. We've already talked about Cardinals. We've talked about Billikens. We've talked about NFL. If you missed any of that and you want to go back and get Bernie's thoughts or those of our guest, Ed Smith, you can do it on the free Audacy app, AUDACY. You can also talk back to us on that app, although it's a little late to get to us in 2026, and we'll see about what we might be able to do for you. Let's talk college football playoff here, Bernie, and I don't want to lead you too strongly because we still have four different games here in the quarter. Final sure. round. Which games stand out to you the most?
Well, the one tonight is interesting because a lot of people think that Miami is going to knock off Ohio State. I can't see it. I think Miami's too flaky. They're a good team, but we've seen them flake out too many times. And Mario Cristobal usually finds a way to get in his own way with some really bad decisions. That was an impressive win against Texas A&M last week. But Texas A&M, if you look closely at their SEC schedule this year, the opponents they played had this incredibly awful collective record in SEC play. So I think Texas A&M was a little propped up. But anyway.
And even then, A&M got Mizzou when, you know, they were down to Matt Zoller's third-string quarterback for the first time.
That's right.
So, you know, I think A&M was in some ways, you know, touched by the hand of God this year in how they were guided through their 12 games.
And, you know, and Miami's defense is good. There's no question about it. But anybody who watched the Texas A&M game, as I did, saw that Marcel Reed, who's a talented quarterback, he was really off. He was really rattled. He was inaccurate. He was hesitant. And then he showed up also for that Miami game. So, you know, I'm trying to factor that in. But here's the bottom line for me. I don't see how Miami, and you know, unless Mark Fletcher does the runaway train thing again, and you cannot run against Ohio State. I don't see how Miami scores enough points against that Ohio State defense. I just don't. To win the game.
To me, the only path for Miami, and I agree, I think Ohio State wins. We were talking about it last night. I said I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I'm a little surprised the number is as big as it is. Last I saw it was 9.5. Right. Ohio State was favored. Just because Miami does have that great pass rush, and although Julian Sain has had a really good year, he's still a young quarterback on a big stage, and he has often put up those great numbers from a very clean pocket, throwing to receivers who are wide open. Mm-hmm. I did the Ohio State-Illinois game. I'm not sure. There were so many NFL scouts there, and I'm not sure they got a single thing from watching Jeremiah Smith, because the Illinois defensive backs were so clearly not on his level. He was separating from them like they were high schoolers, and it just, what was the point of even doing this, right? He ran a fade route from the 1 yard line and had 5 yards of separation in the end zone. How is that even possible? So again, it's not to take away from what Julian Sain has done. He's looked very comfortable in command of that offense. But if Miami can get pressure on him and cover even a little bit in combination and make him uncomfortable, make him operate in a muddy pocket, maybe you have some hope of, first of all, keeping their scoring down, and second of all, more importantly, forcing a couple of turnovers. Because to your point, I think Miami's going to have to, they don't necessarily have to score on defense, but they have to generate points from their defense, whether that's creating great field position through some negative plays, or most likely from winning the turnover margin, probably by at least two.
And there's some real strong, I always look at this, there's some really strong betting trends from an analytical standpoint that really support Ohio State. Under Ryan Day, they've been great in games where they're favored by 3.5 to 9.5 points, just great. And Miami, when they've been in that situation, underdogs 3.5 to 9.5 points under Cristobal, they've lost 4 out of 5 games. So I don't trust Miami. I trust Ohio State a lot more. I tell you what, Nate, and I know we got to get out of here soon, and I'll be brief. The one game that I'm still having a hard time making my mind up on is Oregon and Texas Tech. I'll shut up and let you talk, because I've been talking too much anyway.
No.
How do you see this one? Because I keep going back and forth.
I like Oregon. I think Oregon has persevered in a season where they've had a ton of injuries. Their receiving core was just decimated by the end of the year, and they were still playing good football. That USC game, they put up 40-odd points, and they did it without any of their top three receivers who would have been on the depth chart coming into the year. Obviously, Evan Stewart's been out for the entire year, so some of that they've had time to adjust to as compared to DeCorian Moore picking up his injury later on in the year. But they were dealing with a lot of absences, and they found a way. To me, Texas Tech, it's not to say, I'm not somebody who thinks that the SEC and the Big Ten is all the college football there is, but it is clear that the Big 12 is just not at that level. I don't think Texas Tech has been remotely tested in the way they would have to be for me to feel comfortable picking them against an Oregon team that is healthier than they've been in a long time.
I agree with that. And let me throw a stat at you that I think is, when I saw this, I went, whoa, Texas Tech's offense is not good on early downs. And that's against, you know, Big 12 teams where there's not exactly menacing defenses. But Texas Tech ranks 119th among FBS teams in average third down distance worth of 7.66 yards. And if you think about that, if they're setting up against Oregon, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 6.5 all night or all day, that's big time trouble. I think their quarterback's good. He's not as good as Oregon's quarterback, that's for sure. So I don't. If Texas Tech is playing behind the sticks and putting themselves in 3rd and longs, forget about it. It ain't going to happen.
The one other thing I'll say, and I agree, but the one other thing I'll say about Texas Tech's quarterback is that he is undersized. And I think that's the sort of thing, for the same reason you worry about it most of all jumping from college to the NFL. You worry about it a little bit too, jumping from playing Big 12 competition to playing Oregon's caliber of competition at the top end of the Big 10, because there's just a different level of size and athleticism on that defensive front. I would expect him to have at least a few passes batted down. And in a game like, if it is close, a couple of those third down passes batted down that create stops, and that can be enough to have real marginal value. Obviously, Alabama and Indiana will get a lot of attention around the St. Louis area as well, as will Ole Miss and what they can do against Georgia without Lane Kiffin after blowing out Tulane. That'll do it for Gas House Gang in 2025. Bernie, thanks so much.
I enjoyed working with you, Nate. Happy New Year to you, my friend.
For Bernie Miklas, producer Matt Pajeski, Nate Gatter saying so long. Stay with us on KMOX.